Hi, friends. This is Andy Marquette, and I'm joined by my colleague and friend, Lise McTague. We are Let's Geek Out, the podcast of all things geeky, geekly, bi-weekly, and all kinds of shit like that. Lise, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How about you?
Oh my God, you're fantastic? Really?
Yeah, actually, it's been a pretty decent weekend.
That's the best.
We spent it furniture shopping, and I didn't go insane. So, you know.
That
progress
is a great week. I am on board with that. It was really busy, and the weekend was busy. You know, I know you were furniture shopping while I was cleaning houses. I was cleaning my folks' house and, you know, doing some stuff and just taking care of a lot of shit that needed to get done. I used my weekends to get caught up on laundry and that kind of thing. And so Sunday afternoon comes and I'm like, all right, y'all, that's it. I need time. I'm going to sit on my ass and do nothing. And that is pretty much what I did, which was very nice. Very
that sounds
nice
lovely.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. But since we are the geekly bi-weekly podcast, we should be talking about what we agreed to talk about. Shall we get into it?
Well, it's going to be way more interesting than us looking for bedroom dressers. So,
oh my God.
Hell yeah.
I don't know. There are some pretty awesome bedroom dressers out there.
There really aren't.
Oh, okay. All right, friends, this week, dun, 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 Lise and I are going to discuss another book that we freaking love the hell out of. This is N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season. Dun, dun, dun!
So good.
All right, so let me give you all the background on N.K. Jemisin, okay? New York Times bestselling author of speculative fiction, short stories, and novels. She lives and writes in Brooklyn, New York. In 2018, friends, she became the first author to win three, count them, uno, dos, tres, three best novel Hugos in a row. That's like triple crown, three times in a row, right? For her Broken Earth trilogy. And The Fifth Season is the first in that trilogy. She has also won a Nebula, two Locus, and a number of other honors. In fact, that means N.K. Jemisin, friends, is a spec fic bad ass. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Legendary. And she's still writing.
And she's still freaking writing, okay? So, Lise and I read the first in the Broken Earth trilogy called The Fifth Season. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. I'm going to give you a synopsis from N.K. Jemisin's website so that you can get caught up. But we're going to go into a little bit more detail. But there's a lot of things that goes on in this book, and we're not going to reveal some of the twists because we want you to freaking read this, absorb it, sit with it, and read the rest of the trilogy and her other work, honestly. So here's the synopsis from N.K. Jemisin's website, The Fifth Season. Three terrible things happen in a single day. Essen, a woman living an ordinary life in a small town, comes home to find that her husband has brutally murdered their son and kidnapped their daughter. Meanwhile, mighty Sansa, the world-spanning empire whose innovations have been civilization's bedrock for 1,000 years, collapses as most of its citizens are murdered to serve a madman's vengeance. And worst of all, across the heart of the vast continent known as the Stillness, a great red rift has been torn into the heart of the earth, spewing ash enough to darken the sky for years or centuries. Now Essen must pursue the wreckage of her family through a deadly dying land. Without sunlight, clean water, or arable land, and with limited stockpiles of supplies, there will be war all across the Stillness. A battle royale of nations, not for power or territory, but simply for the basic resources necessary to get through the long dark night. Essen does not care if the world falls around her. She will break it herself if she must, to save her daughter. Okay, now that's one storyline. Okay, Lise, I'm going to turn it over to you and we can talk about the other two characters in this particular storyline, Cyanite and Demaya. Go.
Right, so Essen is one of three main characters that we're following throughout the majority of the book. And Essen, we get the idea is, she's middle-aged, married and has two kids. But then we have Demaya, who is essentially, I think, barely prepubescent. Mm-hmm. And she has been taken from her home when she shows that she is capable of doing orogeny. She's an orogene, and these are people who can control the earth itself. And then we have Cyanite, who is between Essen and Demaya's age. She's a little bit older. She is also an orogene, but she is, you know, further along than Demaya.
Mm-hmm.
And they each have different things going on with them. So we've got Essen, who is trying to track down sort of the shattered remnants of her family and deal with that betrayal. Where we have Demaya, who is dealing with the betrayal of her family, who, once they discover that she has this ability, basically get rid of her as soon as they can. And then we have Cyanite, who is working for this organization of orogenes and is slowly coming to learn that there's more going on with them than she has been aware of. And so these three women's stories kind of weave together and give us a fascinating glimpse into the world of the stillness, which is called the stillness because it's anything but.
I like that. Let's talk a little bit about that. In terms of topography and geology, the stillness right now, and Anki Jemisin did, and I mean, this is not a spoiler because it's the first freaking page of the fifth season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She ended the world, friends, at the beginning of her novel. That is, Lisa and I were just talking about this, and I said, that is not something you see in a book very often. You see it in movies, you see it in TV shows, like Walking Dead, for example, but you don't see it in a book where it's like the first page, basically the narrator, and we'll talk a little bit, Lise, about the different styles of narration. The narrator, which is in this case in the beginning, is an omniscient, all-seeing narrator, basically ends the world and just says, you know, the world's ending. Boom. And this world of the stillness, as you were mentioning, has all kinds of geologic crazy going on right now. Volcanoes, earthquakes, right? That's another one. That's another big one.
Yeah. They call it Father Earth, which I thought was interesting. I mean, we're so used to hearing like Mother Nature or Mother Earth, but in this case, in this world, it's called Father Earth. And so that's a bit of a different spin, but the earth is really its own character. And the other characters in this novel talk about the earth as if it's a person, and as if it's a person who was doing his best to kill them.
Yeah, which is interesting to me, because when you brought up Father Earth, that caught me too as I was reading. And I thought, how interesting that N.K. Jemisin made the Earth, this character that wants to kill people, kind of a male patriarch figure.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm not sure what to do with that yet, but it's something that I've been mulling since I finished the book.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's an interesting spin. You know, we're used to hearing about the earth as being sort of this provider of bounty, and it's what nurtures us and keeps us. And yet in this world, the earth does not nurture. Mm-mm. And people are surviving despite what the earth can throws at them and continues to throw at them with these seasons. So the fifth season comes of the title comes from the fact that in addition to sort of your regular four seasons, this world has what is called a fifth season, which is essentially a season of cataclysm and catastrophe, where the earth sort of gets the better of the people for a while, and they have to fall back on sort of ancient lore to be able to survive through this fifth season and come out the other side with at least somewhat intact civilization.
Yes, somewhat intact. And seasons are, they're like, we're not talking fall, winter, spring. We're talking based on the world building. There's elements to each season, and they can be dozens of years long, or they can be centuries long. And the fifth season, as you say, is the cataclysm. And so we've got our three main characters navigating this cataclysmic season. I want to talk a bit now about origins, because that is such an important concept in this world. Lise, you want to go into that?
Sure. So origins are people who have developed or who are born with the ability to sort of, they call it sessing. They can sess out what's going on with the earth, and with practice become able to consciously affect it. So this, you know, seismically active world can be somewhat, not necessarily tamed, but the worst of the negative effects can sometimes be shunted to the side or delayed using their powers. On the other hand, these are people who this ability is very powerful, and the powers that be, the society in which they live, have decided that they must be controlled. And so they are treated as less than human, mm-hmm. in many ways, both, you know, in the ways they're treated by non-origines and the ways that they treat themselves. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, a distinction that's also written into their laws. So Essen, who is also an origine, we find out has been living as a normal person and has put herself and her family in danger by choosing to live that way.
I was really interested, you know, because I mean, I guess as a queer woman in living in our society, I've always felt like an outcast. So I really related mm-hmm. to the origins and how they are treated. And Jemison's descriptions of how an origine interacts with the earth to fix something, like, were absolutely, for me, beautiful and mm-hmm. mind-boggling. You know, to describe it briefly to listeners in the book, like an origine, say you've got like some kind of situation. There was a situation that Cyanite had to deal with, and the coral was creating a problem in a harbor. So she was called in. There's also an organization that kind of monitors and keeps origines on the straight and narrow, if you will, and really monitors them and then farms them out, exploits them basically, and exploits their power, charges exorbitant rates for communities to use their powers to help them with something. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, the fulcrum.
Yes, the fulcrum. That's what I was looking for. So Cyanide is called into, or Cyan is she's called for short, is called into with another origine, a much more powerful origine, to deal with a situation in a harbor. And that is to remove some, like there's a huge coral buildup that is creating problems with the mouth of the harbor. And so what they can do is, you know, they will use their powers to suss out, to see, like through some other sense that we don't have, the extent of the issue, and then kind of like tap into the earth's power to sort of like shake things loose or even calm the earth if there's an active earthquake. So they can do either. They can destroy or they can calm. And that's a really interesting aspect to what an origine is and isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's interesting, you know, some really interesting intricacies in the magic, in that, you know, so they create this torus of sort of frigid cold around them they're pulling all of the heat out of the air around them as they do this. And so if you get too close to an origine who is doing this work, it can kill you. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that if, you know, an origine who is especially talented and disciplined can use that torus as a weapon, which is another reason why normal people just are really on edge around them.
And scared mm-hmm. of them, you know, because it made me think, and I don't know if this was deliberate, but as I was reading it and thinking about how the origines are seen and treated, I thought about the Salem witch trials and the witch panic and how people who are different are treated. There's like a fear depending on the social circumstances and the culture, because, you know, Salem witch trials is like a term that we throw around, but there was a historian did a study of that and kind of dug into that. And one of the things that was interesting about the so-called witches was that they tended to be women who lived on the fringes of the society, right, whether by choice or because they had something about them that the rest of the community didn't like, whatever it was. And I kept thinking about that as we're dealing with origins going through, you know, and here they are, they're very valuable for what they do, but yet people fear them. And out of that fear comes, you know, revulsion.
Right. To the point where children are being not only given up by their parents, but also treated incredibly poorly before someone comes to take them off their hands.
Let's talk about that. I mean, that, you know, we're dealing with that right now, with children being separated from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And these are...
Well, in the case of the book, they're being separated from their parents because they are useful, as opposed to being separated from their parents because the separation is politically expedient.
But they're also dangerous, because an origin that has no training can be a danger to themselves or their communities.
Yes. And what do they use to control the origins? Well, you've got essentially a whole a cast of people separate from both the origins and sort of the more regular world. You've got this group called the Guardians.
Good point. Bring that up.
Uh-huh.
Go
right.
There.
And so the Guardians are, and I don't want to go too far into this because mm-hmm, some of right. it starts to get spoilery for the next two books, but they basically exist to keep an eye on the Orogenes and will take them out if they think they're out of control.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the Guardians also are of the Orogenes.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And so you've got not just this cataclysmic world and the literal end of this cataclysmic world, but you've got all of these people negotiating their survival within the world. And these three women, Essence, Cyanide, and Demaya, are having to negotiate within this world for their own survival. But also in Essence's case, for example, she's trying to locate her daughter, who her husband or husband, can we say husband, or was he a partner?
No, he was a husband. They were
married. He was a husband. He killed their son and then bailed with the daughter. So she's, you know, she's trying to like not only survive for herself, but for her daughter. And this is not a nice world that we're dealing with.
It isn't. I mean, it's a sort of nasty, gnarly world that's out to get you even when you're not in the midst of a season. And this one, which starts so abruptly and is so just the scale of it is so much bigger than they've seen before. Mm-hmm. And you start to see things like, so not only is ash starting to fall, and so you're not going to be able to plant anything, but the animals are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really interesting because so... The lore that the various groups of people have gathered over time talks about how society is during a season, which mm-hmm. is different than how society operates out of a season. And I thought it was really interesting to see the animals changing as well. And for, you know, a second, you're like, oh, look, those animals are becoming so much more sort of feral and aggressive. And then you realize that, wait a minute, they're not the only ones who are changed by this season. The people are as well.
They're becoming feral and aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just go there, right?
Yeah, well, they're doing, like you said, they're doing what they have to survive. But it's really interesting to see that sort of that mirror that's being held up.
Mm-hmm.
And then to realize that, oh, wait, this is reflecting back. This isn't a picture you're showing me, it's a reflection.
It's a mirror. Right. Oh, my God. Let's talk about, there's a narrator. Let's talk about style and points of view.
Sure.
There's a narrator, yeah. Lise. Talk about that.
There is. And I really enjoyed seeing this. It's not something that we see a huge amount anymore. So we occasionally get like this sort of omniscient narrator who kind of like drops in and sets a scene for us really quickly, like almost in a like breaking the fourth wall kind of way.
Yes.
It's like they're directly addressing us as the reader. And then they just kind of bip out. And I thought that was great just because you don't see omniscient narrators much at all anymore.
It's kind of like, you know, those movie trailers.
In a world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Oh, no, absolutely. And yeah, so it was really fun to see that. But that on top of the way these three characters are treated. So each character has a different point, a different combination of point of view and voice.
Yeah.
And it really serves to set them apart.
It really does. Let's talk about the different points of view, because that was something that Jemison did that just kind of blew my mind, was how each character has a different point of view. And then she weaves all these characters together. They're all having to navigate this world, this mm-hmm. shitty ass world. And she gave them each really distinctive voices. And when you're reading, you know, for the most part, if you read other books, authors can give you a character's different kind of moods and that kind of thing using the same point of view. I liked Jemison's approach using different points of view to really like get you into that person's mindset. So let's talk about the different points of view. Lise, Essen.
Yeah, absolutely. Essen. So Essen is, she's fun because she's not only is she present tense, but she's also second person, which, you know, like narration, we hardly ever see.
Right, exactly.
And this was one of those. So when I first, the very first time I picked this up and you get dropped into that sort of second person.
You do. Boom, drop. There you go.
I was like, ooh, I don't know if I can do this. I'm one of those people who has problem with first person unless it's really well written, and second person is just mm-hmm. a completely different beast, but it's handled so deftly, and then it doesn't take very long before you just sort of lose track that this is a different tense and voice
than what you're used to. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Cyanite.
So Cyanite is third person, but she is also present tense.
And that's
so
interesting.
You get a completely different feel for her. And it's really interesting because as soon as you hit one of Cyanite's chapters, you know exactly that, okay, we've taken this shift. Mm-hmm. And then Demaya is third person, but she is past tense.
Which is this, for those who aren't that, let's go through this. For your listeners, if you're not familiar with points of view, And the terminology.
Yes.
Second person is you. You did this, you did that in a story. Third person present is she kicks, she runs. Third person past, she kicked, she ran. And that's generally the most common is third person, mm-hmm. the past construction. I use that. I have just started branching out Lise in some of my fanfic using third person present.
Ooh.
So, I know, we're getting so fancy.
Fancy.
But doing this thus really differentiates the characters and also differentiates how they interact with the landscape, I would argue.
Absolutely. And it gives us, I think, a really a good sense of where they are in their own head.
Ah,
you know,
yeah,
so Essen, that second person present feels sort of chaotic, which mm-hmm. makes complete sense given that we meet her right after she's discovered the body of her very young son mm-hmm. and essentially goes catatonic for 3 days.
Yeah, she does. And that her character, I think, for me, at least reading this was one of the like there's an immediacy there. She's trying to find her daughter.
There's an immediacy in the tense, but there's a distance in the voice.
Oh my God, please explain, because that just blew my mind. My wig blew off.
Well, so present tense, I mean, you don't get more immediate than what you are feeling right now. Mm-hmm. But She doesn't say I. She doesn't say, you know, Essen. She says you. So it's being pushed off
so
from
it's
that,
sort
that
of
character
like,
almost. It's almost like disassociated.
In a way, but using the second person present also kind of draws the reader in as part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're using the you construction, i.e. you, the reader. Can you know that can also be part of it, and so that,
oh, yeah,
and so you as the reader are drawn into this like holy shit, you know, and it becomes kind of your burden as well to follow Essen as she's on this quest, and she ends up with a really interesting sidekick. The secondary characters that N.K. Jemisin writes are beautiful; they're amazing, and Essen ends up with a young. I want to say he's a boy, but he's
yes.
not really. But but yet, I mean, you know, he's a character who has certain abilities that
yes,
you know,
Hoa.
Yeah, so he's got certain abilities, and it sort of speaks to her because she has these abilities as an origin, and so the two of them form this unlikely team. As they're, he just kind of falls in with her. He's like, "Yeah, we'll help you find your daughter," because he doesn't seem to have anything else to do or. Anywhere else to go. So she ends up with this young man who's, you know, presenting as a boy. Cyanite also has a teammate. And
mm-hmm. Alabaster.
Alabaster. And that's an enemies to friends story. And Cyanite also ends up in a really interesting polyamorous relationship. Kudos
mm-hmm.
to Jemisin for bringing us some rep everywhere, right? Some like, you know, polyamorous rep and queer rep. You go, girl. And
Trans rep,
yes. And Demaya also has her story. And again, as Lise pointed out, she's the kind of prepubescent and
mm-hmm.
dealing with, and her sidekick, soon to be sidekick, is a character that we find out later is subverting gender quote-unquote norms. So
yes,
I loved the way that Jemisin used these tenses to weave these stories together of these, you know, these characters are on these journeys and they're on quests. This is a quest story, and she weaves them together using these different points of view to sort of differentiate the characters in a way, but also to give you, the reader, a sense of what's happening in the world, in the world building. And I don't have the words really to describe that, but it was fascinating because I was reading this not only as someone who's like, oh, this is great shit, but also as someone who's like, wow, how did she do that? That's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the level of craft in there is just insane. And, I mean, she's won award after award after award, and for very, very good reason.
Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah, N.K. Jemisin!
Yeah, and the best part is that, you know, you've got two more books to read after this one.
I'm excited. Y'all, support your local libraries. I'm reading these books at the library, and I'm waiting for the second one to come in. Ah!
It is so worth it. I mean, the first book is amazing, but as a whole, the series is just, it's a tour de force.
Well, the first book just blew my fucking mind, friends. And Lise and I are leaving out that there are some things that happen in this book that we're not talking about because we don't want to spoil it for you. But it's absolutely, and I'm pretty good at seeing twists coming. I did
mm-hmm.
not see half the twists in this book coming.
Nope.
And that's how good it is. And so please do yourself a favor and pick this one up. Her writing style, I found it sort of crisp, but what was interesting.
But it's accessible.
It's very accessible. And when she switched viewpoints, it was seamless. I told Lise, you know, we're talking about the omniscient narrative that interjects every once in a while to sort of give you a little bit of backstory. It was seamless. And one mm-hmm. of my writing friends, Joan Oper, once told me that you know, good writing is like an engine. Everything works and you don't notice if something's off. Good writing just carries you through. It's when something's off and it goes ka-chunk, 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 that you know that the craft isn't quite right. The craft in this book blew my mind. This is, I aspire to be this good. And I, you know, kudos to Jemison, but kudos, you know, also to her writing, her team who helped her like really pull the story out. And oh my God, just using these different, I would never have put second person present into a third person book.
Oh no. No, so the other place where I've seen this device used very successfully is Nicola Griffith's Slow River.
Yes, and we were just talking
about that. Mm-hmm, that is an amazing book, but she stays away from that second person.
Mm-hmm. For now.
Which I certainly don't blame her for. Oh, absolutely. But, you know, in that book, it's a combination of first and third and then, you know, past and present tense. And I thought it was just insanely well done. I still think it's insanely well done, but man, it takes a lot of guts to go for second person.
Absolutely. And to do it well, because like you, Lise, I am off put by second person. I mean, I'm just like, I don't know if I can do this. Jemison nails it. And just the flow, the ebb and flow of the story and the world building. We were going to say a little bit about the world building. Did you want to talk about how the world building itself is a character?
Oh, absolutely. Because so aside from our little sort of omniscient narrators, and then we get some like fragments of the history kind of sprinkled in as like little sort of, what are they called? Not outtakes, but you know what I mean. Little like snippets.
Little interjections of backstory.
Like yeah. So aside from those, not a whole lot is explained to us that isn't also something, you know, it's only explained to us when a character needs to know it.
Exactly.
And so we're just sort of expected to follow along and figure it out just the same way the characters are. So I think that's one of the reasons why Demaya is so important to the story, because she's a blank slate. There's a lot she doesn't know. And in her getting filled in, the reader also gets filled in. Mm-hmm. But we don't start getting Demaya's point of view until a little bit later in the book. And then Cyanite fills us in a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then Essen fills us in on like, okay, so this is what happens when things really go sideways. But they're all relayed to us through the character's experience, which is my favorite way to get world building, because it's so seamless and you don't realize that you're just picking up this knowledge of what's going on in this world until you're like, oh, shoot.
Right.
You know, there are no info dumps. It's just little snippets and then what the characters learn as they go.
I really like that you just talked about how we got different aspects of world building through the characters, through each of the different characters. I hadn't even made that connection. It was something that was mulling in my brain, but I was like, wow, Lise just nailed it, because each character is interacting differently with the world and brings different experience and ideas to the world. And so we get certain filters through each character that reveals a little bit more or a little other things about the world. Man, that is fucking amazing if you think about it. Like how Jemison really did that. I mean, what? She actually used each of her characters to show you, the reader, a different aspect of this world. And you're so sucked in by the story, by the characters, by the writing, that you're just like, oh, fuck yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great because, you know, at no point do you get sort of pulled out of what is happening to the characters to get something about the world pointed out to you, which I think is what really helps with that sort of seamless experience of Jemison's writing.
That nails it. And we are now at 35 minutes, Lise. Oh my God.
Holy crap.
We could talk about this book forever, clearly, friends. N.K. Jemisin, the fifth season, is part of her, which series, please? Oh my God.
The Broken Earth.
The Broken Earth series. Jesus Christ. I am currently waiting on my library to get the second in so I can read it. Ah! Please do yourselves a huge fucking favor and read the fifth season. It's amazing. And hell yes, N.K. Jemisin, three freaking Hugos, well deserved. Oh my Absolutely. God. Nails it. So thank you for writing that, NK. I'm of course going to tag her on Twitter and be like, we love this book. Thank you so much. Anyway, Lise, let's do some shout outs. What have you been doing, anything, watching anything, reading anything, thinking about anything that needs a shout out?
Oof, I've actually mostly been working on getting my manuscript up to snuff.
That's a shout out. Y'all,
Lise, I've mostly been writing.
You guys, I'm just going to like say this to you, dear listeners. Lise just submitted a manuscript to her publisher, and within 12 hours, they wanted it. So you all keep your eyes open for Lise.
Yep.
Lise's latest.
It's a little something new.
It's different, and I'm excited.
Very different. Yeah, me too.
I am really excited about this. Oh my God. All right, so I have a couple of shout-outs. Or did you have some more shout-outs that you want?
No, no, go ahead, because I've got, like, my shout-out is, oops, I've been working.
That is a legit shout-out, I think. Okay, friends. Okay, the CW. For those of you who watch the CW, you know the CW is kind of like, it does some things right, it does some things wrong, whatever the hell.
They're a little hit or miss.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been watching Nancy Drew on the CW. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first couple of episodes, I was like, oh, I don't know. But I am fucking hooked now. And guess what? I got my mom hooked. So the two nice. Of us now have Wednesday night Nancy Drew view. All right. And the thing that is so cool about Nancy Drew, other than the fact that this remake is amazing and I'm loving it, and making it sort of modern, quote unquote, modern, you know, mm-hmm. for the new world. And I love that the people who hate it are like, this isn't the Nancy Drew I grew up with. I honor that. I respect that because I read all of those novels growing up. But guess what? It's 2020 now. You know,
yep.
It ain't 19, whatever the hell again. And I love that in throughout the Nancy Drew series, there are like, there's little shout outs to the past, like Keene High School. Carolyn Keene wrote Nancy Drew, right? I mean, I'm just so mm-hmm. great. So y'all, I'm serious. Do yourselves a favor and stream this, watch this. It is so good. The way it develops, the way the characters develop and how they interact and how there's like little like Easter eggs to the past. I mean, it's like there's an honoring there of Nancy Drew of the past. Speaking of mysteries, and there's a paranormal element too, which kind of was hinted at in the originals.
Oh, nice.
It's full blown in this one, and it's amazing. In that genre, the mystery kind of thriller genre, I also want to tell people to read Steve Cavanaugh, CavaNaugh. I'll provide a link. He writes super good thrillers. They're set in New York City. His main character, Eddie Flynn, is an attorney with a really speckled past. This guy he was a con artist. He was a con man, became an attorney, and he draws on his con artist past to kind of help him negotiate and navigate these things that come up in his life. And this dude, I mean, bless his heart, he gets hammered with a lot of shit, but he's a classic but not so classic anti-hero these. And I love that character. I love that kind of character. It's like, They're not entirely good. They're not entirely bad. And they do what they think has to be done because they think it's the right thing to do. So Steve Cavanaugh, check out his work too. I have just started the fourth in his series with Eddie Flynn. And it's, I'm just like, the irony is the guy he's Irish and he's writing stories based in New York City. I have mm-hmm. found some mistakes, whatever, but he tells an amazing thriller, very fast paced, really good character development. And I love me an anti-hero. I love that.
Sweet. Yeah, so, anti-heroes are great. We need to do a show about anti-heroes one of these
days. We totally should. And let's think about that. We will have a chat about that later.
Alrighty.
Mm-hmm. All right, friends. Lise, did you have some final thoughts about N.K. Jemisin? Or?
Well, she has a couple of other series also. I am particularly fond of her 100,000 Kingdoms series, which is really good. So yeah, once you get hooked on this one, there's more to go.
Sweet. All right, friends. Thank you for joining us. I am Andy Marquette, joined with Lise McTague. We are Les Geek Out. Geekly bi-weekly, geeking out about all things books, TVs, movies, graphic novels, whatever the hell we decide to geek out about. Thanks for joining us, and y'all have yourselves a good week and good 2 weeks, because we're geekly bi-weekly. Thanks all. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, can you imagine if we were geekly semi-weekly? Holy crap.
Oh my god, that would be insane.
I'm sorry, I have to quit my day job just to do podcasting.
There are people who podcast like every week or twice a week or even more. I don't know how they do it.
Me either. I don't think my wife would be super thrilled if I was like, hey, I need to go podcast for our tens of followers. So
yeah, whatever. I enjoy talking about these things with you.
Oh, me too. I'm just saying it wouldn't pay the bills
I know,
for
right?
a while.
Oh, well, maybe someday.